Several people have asked recently that I review the etiquette of asking questions. We had a couple of people over the last couple of weeks that didn't really want to ask questions. They wanted to make long speeches. And we encourage civil, polite, respectful discourse. But when it comes time to ask questions, we hope you'll ask questions. And normally what we do at the end of the speaker's talk, I go to the back of the room with a handheld mic and invite anyone who has a question that they would like to ask to please come back and ask the question. The reason we do it in the back is because of these two TV cameras in the front. They are remotely operated. It's hard for them to pick out one person in the middle of the audience, and so we have them fixed on the two spots in the back of the room. And please don't be bashful about asking a question. Occasionally, I'm standing back there all by myself, and I get very lonesome looking around. And I usually have two or three questions that I'd like to ask, but, you know, I get to spend an hour with the speaker before, and I get to have lunch with the speaker afterwards. So I got plenty of time to ask my questions, and we hope very much that you will ask your questions, because that's what the people in the room and the people who are watching over our webcast and our telecast are interested in. They love the comments we get very frequently, or what great questions you get from the audience. So please ask some of those great, great questions. It's a pleasure to welcome everyone today to the Miller Center Forum. Our guest today is a woman whose career I've been following with some interest for the past 3 years. Karen Agnes graduated from the University of Virginia and is now a first-year student at the University of Virginia's law school. She founded, while an undergraduate, the organization that's now become a national organization called the Network of Enlightened Women, NEW. She founded this as a conservative alternative, a conservative voice, to provide some balance in the studies at colleges and universities of women's issues. And I think that like in many other topics, we strive very hard to present multiple voices on topics of current interest, and it's a great pleasure today to introduce Karen Agnes.
To say it's an honor to speak here today. To begin, I would like everyone to imagine a drawing of a woman dressed in a perfectly pristine gingham dress. She has an apron on and her hair is evenly curled. In one hand, she's reading a recipe out of a book, and with the other, she's stirring batter. But what's striking about this drawing is that she's connected to a machine that's popping out not one, not two, not three, but 11 babies. Yes, she is a baby-making machine. And this is the way the conservative women's organization that I founded at UVA was portrayed on the cover of the Liberal magazine only 2 weeks after we began. The organization I founded is called the Network of Enlightened Women, or NEW. It's a contrast to the well-known feminist organization NOW, the National Organization for Women. And it is a book club for conservative women. As Mr. Gillum mentioned, I started it a little over 2 years ago at UVA, and since that time, we've now grown into a national organization. And I'm excited to share that story with you today. In the process of starting NEW, I've really learned that I'm not just an isolated individual who felt pushed out of the college campus's institutions just because I had traditional values, but really there's a lot of other women on college campuses that feel the same way. To give you an idea of what we were thinking about when we started the organization, I'd like to read to you the three questions that I put on our first flyer all over grounds for our first interest meeting. The first question, enjoy discussing the UVA hookup culture? Secondly, are you confused about politics? And third, Are you not sure how you're going to balance your work and life, not sure how you're going to balance your work and family? If these questions are troubling you, join the Network of Enlightened Women. Now, this all began about 2 years ago when I had the opportunity to intern for my senator, Senator Lugar, in Washington, D.C. It was a wonderful experience. I had a great opportunity to be surrounded by other conservative women. And rather than just defend my conservative beliefs from attack, I really got to get into the nuances of the argument through those discussions. So when I came back to UVA at the beginning of my junior year, I really sought out an environment to continue those discussions. Now, if any of you follow the newspaper at UVA, you'll see there's news stories all the time on all kinds of different organizations. There's a belly dancing club, an archery club, a powerlifting club, debating societies, a national organization of women chapter. So I figured, among these over 500 clubs at UVA, there had to be something for conservative women. But there was nothing. So then I looked on colleges throughout the campuses, all across the country. There's databases online, so I was able to look them all up and see if there were any organizations like what I was looking for. But again, I could find nothing. So at this point, I'm really thinking, okay, you know, this has been tried and tried and tried again, and it just failed miserably. You know, this group of the population just doesn't work to have a group for them. Or for some odd reason, this has never been tried. And then I thought of one more place I should look before I should just start an organization like this. So I approached the Women's Center. Now, the Women's Center, it's a pretty innocuous sounding name, the Women's Center. You think it would be open to all women. Well, unfortunately, that wasn't the case. I scheduled an appointment with the woman who is now, and please remember this, she's now the director of diversity at the Women's Center. I scheduled an appointment with her. We had a great meeting. She took me all around the center, told me all about their programs, catering to all different populations. And at the end of the meeting, I decided to ask her, would you be interested in co-sponsoring an organization for conservative women? She looked at me like I was crazy, chuckled, and said, not here. And this is when I decided to start new. You see, women have made great gains in the 20th century, and we're thankful for that. But unfortunately, feminists have gone too far. They've opened the door to many careers, but at the same time have relegated those women who choose motherhood to second-class citizens. Rather than giving women a choice, they've made the choice for them. And this is the message we get from our female professors all the time. And this is the message that was portrayed on that cover of that magazine when we were portrayed as baby-making machines. So this is why we needed new. Unlike our radical feminist counterparts, we're culturally conservative. We embrace femininity. We embrace modesty. We recognize that there are differences between the sexes. And rather than focusing on our careers as the only way to add value to society and measure our self-worth, we recognize the value of motherhood. In New, we've created a community of conservative women. We meet regularly to discuss issues relating to gender, politics, and conservative beliefs. And our mission statement is to cultivate a community of conservative women and to expand the intellectual diversity on college campuses. Now, you hear all about diversity on college campuses, but unfortunately, that's often focused too much on descriptive diversity rather than true intellectual diversity. So there's two tracks in New. First and foremost, we are a book club. We read books together and discuss them. And then secondly, we hold events to try to educate the larger campus. So I'd like to first share with you about the book club. Now, the book club serves as a wonderful organizational tool. I'm sure many of you have been involved in organizations where you go to meetings, you seem to wander aimlessly, and you're not sure what you get out of those meetings when you leave. Unfortunately, that's how a lot of clubs are run. But with New, this doesn't happen. You see, before each meeting, our women read a chapter from the book. They come to the meeting, where there's always cookies, and someone gives a speech about the book and talks about summarizes the chapter we were supposed to read, and then we discuss the chapters. So by the time you leave, you really have an understanding of what we had read. And in this book club, what I find so wonderful about it is that we're really reading ideas and reading about people who are often purposely left off our college syllabi. You see, I'm going to show you the need for New by looking at the institutional bias found in some university departments. Now there's another, you know, I told you about the Women's Center, an innocuous sounding name. There's another department that's institutionalized at UVA that has the same problem, the Studies in Women and Gender Department. Once again, you would think this would be open to all women, but it's not. It has an inclusive department name, but it's exclusive in practice. You see, I'd like to share with you their introductory course. It's called Women's Lives in Myth and Reality. It's the introductory course to the department, so anybody that wants to major in this department has to take it. Now, the description on the website reads, this course will explore women's past and present circumstances and envision future possibilities and alternatives. Well, in reality, the reality for many women includes aspirations to have a traditional family. And this course says it will envision future possibilities. Yet, there's no section on the syllabi that talks about the traditional family structure or deals with questions about how women who are both ambitious and want to have careers but also recognize the value in having families. It just assumes that there's only one right choice. And again, if you look on the SWAG department website for their overall description of what they're about, it says, the Studies in Women and Gender is an interdisciplinary program that seeks to analyze history and culture from a woman's perspective. So we're trying to analyze history from a woman's perspective. So I searched to see if I could find works by a conservative woman on the SWAG syllabus. And I searched and I searched and I searched. And after 10, I could find nothing. Rather, they had articles such as Feminism a la Casa, Bringing Feminism to Your House, and all kinds of different articles focusing on gender issues and transsexuality and bisexuality, but nothing on the traditional family. I really encourage you to read through some of these syllabi. It's actually quite laughable. But what we see here is a lack of diversity, and it really gets worse. Even the professors at UVA in this Women's Studies department reject us new as kind of the ugly stepchildren that they wish would just go away. I'd like to read you a direct quote from a Time magazine article on new. And I quote, Professor Ann Lane, a former director of the UVA Women's and Gender Studies program, is embarrassed that new got its start at her university. I'm not particularly opposed to the group's existence. I just don't like it, she says. I particularly don't accept their premise that men and women occupy such culturally different spaces. And the article continues. Lane, who has not read News Constitution, bases her opinion on Hoff Summer's lecture in Campus Rumor. Someone told me that Lynn Cheney is a major contributor of theirs, she says. Such hearsay, however, is wrong. You see, the SWAG has rejected us and ignores us and won't even take the chance to get to know what we stand for. And this just gives you an idea of how the liberal ideas dominate the college campuses and really try to keep other people out. It's an institutionalized radical feminist department, and it shows why new is so important to bringing the other side to college campuses. And this is why we are reading books. We're taking a proactive approach. We're not just complaining about what's going on. We're trying to educate ourselves and educate the larger community. So I'd like to give you an idea of some of the books that we're reading. One of the first books that we read was called What Our Mothers Didn't Tell Us, Why Happiness Eludes the Modern Woman by Danielle Crittenden. This book focuses on the failures of modern feminism and how this really impacts our generation. For example, she writes on the hookup culture that dominates college campuses. The feminists have seemed to have made an alliance with those who push for greater sexual liberation. They claim that this empowers women, but really this hookup culture just hurts us. Crittenden points out that women suffer consequences from their behaviors later in life when they try to actually search out real relationships and can't find them. New challenges the merits of the hookup culture and would like to see the dating culture revived. This is another example of how we are a culturally conservative organization. Then the second book we read was called Great American Conservative Women by the Claire Booth Luce Policy Institute. And this is one of my favorites. You see, this book is organized by profiles of conservative women, such as Star Parker, Phyllis Schlafly, Condi Rice, Elaine Donnelly, a lot of great women. And these are women and who's not only are not on our syllabi, but also who are not, their ideas are not really presented. And I really like a quote from the late Jean Kirkpatrick in this book. As many of you probably know, she was the first woman appointed to serve as the permanent representative to the UN for the U.S. And I think you'll enjoy a statement by her. She has three grown sons and wrote an article called Women Should Refuse to Choose Between Having a Family and a Career. And I'd like to quote her. She said, "People have often said to me, what did I do that was the most interesting thing in my life? The answer is having a baby. Having and raising babies is more interesting than making speeches at the UN. Believe me." Now, the third book we've read is called Talking from 9 to 5 by Deborah Tannen. And to be honest, I don't even know if Deborah Tannen is a conservative or a liberal, or even if she cares about politics. But what's so wonderful about this book is that she accepts and presents the basic premise that men and women communicate differently. And this recognition of the differences between the sexes is something that we embrace that our feminist counterparts don't. And she writes about how this impacts the career advancement of women. And so it's really interesting to see what those differences are and how we communicate and how we can capitalize on them to be more successful in the work world. Now, women face some unique challenges, and this shows the need for new, to give women and other people the other side of the debate and a forum to discuss these important topics. And now, the book club is great, but as many of you in the audience can attest, when you get a group of women together, you never know what's going to happen. And this is what has exactly occurred with New. You see, we started as a book club, but once we got together, we decided we didn't want to just stop there. We wanted to educate the larger campus as well. So I'd like to tell you a little bit about some of the events that we've held that are bringing true intellectual diversity to the college campuses. Now first, how many of you have heard of the Vagina Monologues? A good response. Most of you have heard of this play. Now, this is a play that's performed on over 500 college campuses around the country. What it comes down to is it's really a play that just exalts vaginas. And I'd like to give you a little taste of what happens in one of these monologues. And don't worry, it's appropriate, although much in the play is not appropriate for polite company. But in this one monologue, a 24-year-old woman invites a 14-year-old girl into her car. The 24-year-old asks the girl to spend the night, feeds her vodka, slides into lingerie, and then teaches the young girl how to play with herself. And this is not condemned by feminists. Instead, a feminist wrote the play, and many of them perform in it annually. And the play gets worse. The girl says, "I realized later she was my surprising, unexpected, politically incorrect salvation." So in the Vagina Monologues, then, a pedophile is compared to salvation. After seeing this play for the first time, I realized that it objectified women, it made men look pitiful, and it glorified rape. And I did not understand why feminists and other outspoken women would not condemn this play. In my first 2 years at the university, no one challenged it because the feminists said it was good. Now, New is reacting to things like this. We want women to be respected and treated like ladies and not objectified for our bodies. So New decided to challenge this play. We wanted to expose it for what it was and to educate the larger campus on what really was going on. So we hosted Dr. Christina Hoff Summers. She gave a talk titled Sex, Lies, and the Vagina Monologues. This exposed the play for what it is. Over 200 people came out, and we sparked a two-week-long debate in our school newspaper over it. Now, this is what we really want to do. We're getting people to think about this play and not just take it for what it is, but challenge it and really think about if it should be shown on campuses. We found this play insulting, so we challenged it. But you know what? The story continues, and I think it gets better. A year later, we decided we wanted to do something else when the play came back again that next February. You see, that first year, they had shown the play at their time, and we had held our speaking event the couple days before, and we were kind of on separate realms. I wanted to bring us together to really talk about the play and debate it. I thought this would be a great way to expose, so that we could expose what was going on, and at the same time, give them a chance to defend it. So, as I think anyone logically would do, I emailed the directors of the play, It was a nice email, told her we would do all the work, because I know they were busy putting on the play, if they would agree to debate us. We'd do an hour debate, open it to the public. We'd even have a moderator so that it would make sure it stayed, you know, under control. But they decided they were too busy to do that. So the next person I contacted was the director of the local national organization for women chapter. And I asked her if she would debate us over the play. She did not feel comfortable debating it with us. Now remember, this is a play that's shown on over 500 college campuses. It's praised and raved about all over. And they all wear t-shirts that say, I love vaginas. Like, they're not reluctant to talk about it. But she was uncomfortable talking about it with us. So we finally were able to get the president of the University Democrats to debate the play with us. Again, it was a hugely successful event. We had standing room only and really got to the merits of the play. But remember, as I told you at the beginning, both the directors of the play and the now chapter president were too busy or too uncomfortable to come discuss it with us. But what I thought was so interesting is they all came, and they didn't just come. They wore matching shirts, asked loud questions, and made their presence known. Suddenly, they found the time and felt comfortable discussing the play. And I just think this shows they didn't want to actually engage the issue. They owned it. This is a praised play, and they were not willing to defend it. We're bringing our ideas to the table, and that's the value of new. Now, I've given you the basic outline of this club and why it's working at UVA. But the story doesn't end at UVA. You see, within 6 months of starting it, I received an email from a student at William & Mary who said that she was interested in starting a club of her own. She asked me if I'd be willing to help. Well, I was thrilled to help and went down to their first meeting to get them started. At this point, we began our national expansion. I started recruiting women by speaking at events, getting a website launched, and writing editorials. And as you'll see in one of your handouts, our website is at the bottom, so if you want any more information on NEW, you can go to www.enlightenedwomen.org, and we have a website up that tells all about our organization and what we're doing, and even has a list of recommended books that are on there to supplement the college education. And by graduation from college, we had 7 chapters up and running. And I think there's 3 main reasons why this was really working. First was self-selection. You see, the women that were starting these organizations were really coming to me, so I knew they were motivated. And they were the ones that had been repulsed by what was going on the campus. So once they wanted to start it, they were determined to get it done right. Second, I've tried to make this easy for them. You know, when you start an organization on a club, or start a club on a campus, you'd be shocked at how much bureaucracy you have to go to. You have to write a constitution, you have to submit it to your student council, you have to present to your club, you apply for funding, and this all just takes time and energy and effort. Well, I didn't want people wasting time reinventing the wheel, so I decided to put a disc together that had all the documents that we used for our UVA chapter, and when a woman wanted to start it, I would just mail it to them, and then they could use those documents so they didn't have to waste time redoing the work. And really, all you need to start an organization like this is conservative women in books, so it really doesn't have a lot of cost to get started on the campuses. And finally, I think this is working because these women all across the country were repulsed by the hookup culture that was dominating and also the feminist dogma that was being taught by so many of their professors. And this really pushed women to start new chapters. And then after we'd got those 7 up and running, over the summer, as I mentioned earlier, a Time magazine article came out on NEW. And I started receiving dozens and dozens of emails. So I decided to hold the first annual NEW National Conference in Washington, D.C. We brought over 40 women together from around the country, and we spoke about the challenges we were facing on our campus and how we wanted to take a proactive role to solving these issues and discussing them. And there was just a tremendous amount of enthusiasm and energy at this conference, and really launched us into more growth. We're now a recognized nonprofit organization with 15 campuses around the country. In Virginia, we've got UVA, William & Mary, and a chapter at the University of Mary Washington. And then around the country, I'll just tell you some of our newest chapters, the University of Oregon, University of Florida, Arizona State University, and since I'm from Indiana, I was really excited that we finally got one started at Indiana University this semester. So now I thought I'd share with you a little bit about what our chapters are doing around the country. This semester, our UVA chapter is reading a book called A Return to Modesty by Wendy Shalit. Our High Point University chapter is reading The Politically Incorrect Guide to Women, Sex, and Feminism by Carrie Lucas. Texas State University is reading What Our Mothers Didn't Tell Us, Why Happiness Eludes the Modern Woman by Daniel Crittenden. And the University of Mary Washington is reading Women Who Make the World Worse by Cato Byrne. Now, I'd also thought I'd share with you some of the events that we've held both at the UVA chapter and at other chapters. Our UVA chapter just this month held a debate for Women's History Month. It was titled, Are We Getting It Right? The State of Women's Studies Departments, which questioned the legitimacy of women's studies departments all around the country. We brought in Jennifer Roebuck Morris, who is an author and public speaker, to come debate and talk about how we really don't need these departments. And the liberal women decided to bring in Amy Richards to come debate. It was another great event where we really got to the heart of the issue. And I think at least all on our side thought we won, that we do not need these departments. Some other events we've held is we did a coffee with Kellyanne Conway, who wrote the book What Women Want, who talks about how women vote in elections. And it was really interesting. You know, we hear every day on the news about different populations of women. We have the security moms and the soccer moms and how different candidates are trying to get their votes. Well, she came and really described those groups to us and what she thinks needs to be done to get women on your side of the voting. We also held a panel called Balancing a Career and Raising a Family. And I think this is one of the favorite events of many of our members. We had three local women come in and talk about their paths and, for instance, what kind of careers they felt worked well with motherhood and, you know, decisions they had made that they regretted or thought were good and that the advice they would give to pass on to young students. And another great event our UVA chapter did was a trip to Richmond. We went and saw the Capitol and walked around the Supreme Court building. And it was just a wonderful trip. And our groups around the nation are also holding events. Like UVA, they found that they love the book club, but once they got this started, they want to expand to the larger campus as well. Our High Point University chapter just co-sponsored this past fall with Young America's Foundation a 9/11 commemoration, where they commemorated the date with a nice ceremony and flags representing each person that was lost on that day. Our Arizona State University chapter hosted Kathy Harrell of the Center for Arizona Policy. She's a strong woman in a leadership position, and I think this is great for that chapter. They also sold carnations on Valentine's Day to try to bring back the romance to that day, because this is the day where the Vagina Monologues is always portrayed, or always put on. And finally, they handed out pamphlets exposing the Vagina Monologues play for what it was. Also, our Tallahassee Community College chapter just did a book drive for their local Big Brother, Big Sister house. They collected books all fall and then brought them to this house to encourage literacy. Now, I've shared with you where we are. I'd like to talk more about our future. Concretely, we're very excited to announce that we're going to be having our second annual New National Conference this summer in Washington, D.C. at the end of June. Now, our first conference really focused on describing the organization and informing people about it. From it, we were able to start another half dozen chapters after people heard more about the organization. But this time, it's going to be much more of an intensive training seminar. You see, after working with these women around the country, I've realized that we're all facing a lot of the same problems. For example, fundraising, marketing, and finding sponsors. One thing I think is really interesting at UVA, because of our tradition of student self-governance, you don't have to have a sponsor to start an organization. And so when I wanted to start it, I was able to fill out the forms and get it started with a few friends. But at a lot of campuses, they require you to find a sponsor that will vouch for your group and come to meetings and really put it under their name so they're affiliated with it. What's been really interesting is one of the challenges many of our chapters faces is finding somebody to sponsor the organization. You see, there's not that many conservative women in the academia that are on college campuses. A lot of the women that are there teaching were not willing to sponsor an organization like this. So that's a challenge that you might not think of, but that's really popped up for many of our chapters. Now, I'm confident that we're going to continue to grow in the future. You see, our organization has huge potential for growth because we are relatively new. And when people hear more about it, every time we receive publicity, I always receive more inquiries from people about how they can start a chapter on their campus. And there's three main reasons I'm really confident that we're going to continue to grow. First, we filled a niche. You see, on college campuses, there's women's centers, studies in women and gender departments, now chapters, and all kinds of groups focused on the left. But right now, there's not anything focused solely on the right. And this is what we're bringing to the campus. We're giving a place for conservative women to talk about these issues that are really important to us. Secondly, I think our flexible structure has made this organization really a good organization to expand. See, I've created a general framework. We're a book club, and this can be translated to other college campuses and adapted very well. A little story is about the Tallahassee Community College. They wanted to do this book drive that I had mentioned earlier, and so the chapter president emailed me and asked me if that would be okay. Of course, I said it was a great idea. Go for it. Turned out to be a big success, so afterwards, I had her write up a report on it and send it to me, and then I emailed it out to all of the chapter presidents. You see, when we do an organization like this that has the flexibility, then they can all learn from each other, and I hope next year a lot of the other chapters will do that as well. Third, New actually gives women something. As I mentioned earlier, we're not a club where you come and you're not sure what you get when you leave. You know what you're going to get. It's a great place to build friendships. Also, it's a wonderful place to be associated with other conservative women. Our UVA chapter, for example, is not just political science majors. The secretary next year is in the engineering school. One of my friends that graduated with me is now working on Wall Street. We've got people who are in the business school, in the economics department. All different kinds of departments. And so this is a great way to meet women across different fields that share similar values. And third, we're becoming more educated. As I said earlier, we really take this mission as important to educate ourselves. And we're a proactive group. We try to take the positive side on things and make an effort to make our lives and those around us better by really educating them on the issues. You know, it's been so exciting for me to see how many conservative women there are on college campuses throughout the country who are willing to stand up for what they believe in. In conclusion, from the tremendous growth of NEW, I am confident that we are shaping a new generation of women. Thank you.
While I move to the back of the room to entertain questions for Karen Agnes, I'd like to pose a question with really two parts. Your motivation, at least initially, was dissatisfaction with the way women's history and women's issues were being taught at the Academy. And as a history teacher and one who's been interested in these issues, I've seen that certainly the last 150 years of women's history is pretty well broken down into two groups. One group that would like women to have exactly equal rights with men. They'd like to serve in combat. They'd like to vote. They'd like to just be equal in every respect, equal pay. Others have sought protective legislation. They've wanted limits on the hours that women could work, and they've wanted in some ways to be treated apart and as special. So I'd like to ask you two things. Number one, how would you like to see that history taught and in the Academy? And number two, in the public arena, how would you like to see those issues resolved?
Good questions, both. The first one, I'd like to start with an example from one of the classes I took. It was called Gender Politics. So obviously we're going to be discussing a lot about these gender issues that I've brought up today. And in this class, we studied the first wave and the second phase of feminism. And as Mr. Gillen brought up, there are two main theories. There's the women who want equality as sameness, so everything exactly like men, and women who want equality as difference, where you recognize the differences between the sexes and then adapt your public policy that way. And I think a concrete answer to what you're asking can be shown by an example in this class. One of the topics we obviously discussed was second wave feminism. And in this, we discussed the Equal Rights Amendment, the ERA. Now, the way my professor chose to present this was to talk about the merits of this amendment and how it was a great representation of how women really mobilized for it and how they fought all over the country for it and how, unfortunately, it was just the men who kind of stopped it. But anybody who really knows the story of the Equal Rights Amendment knows that it was one woman who stood up that really stopped it, Phyllis Schlafly. She organized the Stop ERA movement. And the way I found out about Phyllis Schlafly was that the professor put her on the screen and mocked her during class because there was a little link on her website that said that you could report your liberal professors by clicking on the link. So she brought it up there, mocked her, and then dared us to report her to Phyllis Schlafly. And so that's how I heard about that. And we didn't talk about the merits of her arguments about why this Equal Rights Amendment wasn't necessarily good for women. We just kind of mocked the whole movement. But really, that was an important movement, and a lot of women were mobilized for that. So I think in response to the question of, you know, how should things be taught differently on the campuses, it's by giving an equal representation to the strong conservative women's groups that have grown and what they've done to challenge feminism. This isn't just feminists and women against men. It really is radical feminists against other women who have mobilized against them.
Then in the public policy arena, how would you like to see that push and pull? How would you like to see it played out?
I think one challenge I face is when you look at the feminists and some of the dialogue in the larger discourse, is it's always framed in terms of this is the women's group. This is the women's perspective. But unfortunately, it's not. We're not all part of this radical feminist left wing. There is another perspective. So an example here at UVA, which I would like to see translated in the broader spectrum, is our Cavalier Daily newspaper. In this newspaper, whenever there were issues affecting women, they would always contact the local UVA Now chapter and ask them for a quote. And I always loved the byline. It would say, "Now," which represents the women at UVA, "says this," and it would give that perspective. Well, after we started new and after we got up and running, I contacted the Cavalier Daily and encouraged them to ask some of our members what they thought, because Now is not representing all women. And so one of our big victories, and not many people noticed it probably, but there was an article that came out, and it actually said, what did the Now chapter think, quoted them, and then quoted one of our new members underneath it saying, "An alternative women's organization thinks this." And I thought that was a big success for a group. And that's what I would like to see in the larger discourse, is that it's not just the feminist perspective representing all women, but more women's voices are being heard.
I'd like to ask, in order to be a conservative, enlightened woman, I understand that you would have to be against the vagina monologues. What would you be for? Would you, for example, be for George Bush?
A lot wrapped up in that question. What I always say is that with New, we're a conservative organization first and foremost. And so many of our members are Republicans, and probably some of them support the president. But we do not campaign in elections. We don't campaign for candidates. Any kind of electioneering that people want to do, they do on their own and not through New. So, and also as a response to kind of other issues, we don't have a litmus test where people who want to be members have to fill out a checklist that they agree with this, this, and this. It really is an opportunity for women that just have more of a traditional perspective to get together and discuss ideas together.
Karen, I'm not a member of New, but my answer to that question would be I'm certainly for George Bush and what he's done for this country. But you mentioned earlier in your remarks about how liberal ideas dominate the campuses. And I know you're familiar with the new book that's out by David Horowitz on the 101 worst professors in America, and so named because of the liberal agenda and spin they put on in their classrooms. But my question to you is, as a new organization, and I really applaud what you've done here and the ideals and principles and values that your organization is bringing to the forefront. But what would you say is your greatest need as a new organization, and how can we help you as laymen in accomplishing your purposes?
Well, thank you. I think I'll give two responses to that. Obviously, as a new organization, the funding is always an issue. So if anybody would be interested in helping us in that front, we would definitely take you up on that. One of our chapter presidents is right over there in the green shirt, Krista, and so you can talk to her afterwards. I'm sure she'd be happy to help there, or myself. And secondly, is getting the word out. What I'm so excited about the future of this organization is that it's not like everybody knows about it and then only a few people decided to build chapters. It's not out there everywhere. What happens is when we get publicity and more people hear about it, then we just continue to grow. So I think it's a matter if you can send an email to your children or grandchildren or friends at other campuses who might be interested in starting a chapter, and they can contact me or look on our website on that paper, and that's really how we're going to continue to spread. So those would be two ways. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your interesting presentation. I'm completely in agreement with abolishing women's studies departments across the country. I just think that's, I won't make any further asides, but I'm a moderate liberal, yet I favor abolishing these departments. I really have trouble understanding why you have insisted on the link between conservatism or traditional values, I guess, and women's issues as you see them. I agree completely with many of the comments you've made about what is right and wrong about women's life in America. I'm very concerned about how women are able to have a career and raise a family. I'm a physician. I saw this as a terrible problem in the area of residencies and academic careers, and I'm sure this is true elsewhere. Why do you need to have a club that is both pro-women and insist that you be conservative in the values? Why would I not be able to join your club? Why is there not a club then? Why wouldn't it be just as good as you if you opened it to women who had more progressive other political views?
We have, first, a short remark. We have had some liberal women come to our meetings, and they're welcome to bring that side to our meetings. And then I think the larger answer comes in what I was presenting about the women's studies departments and the women's centers and the other clubs that are already formed, is they all take a liberal bent. And they all have moved so far to the left that what we bring is something that, as you mentioned, you make a great point, that many people can agree with this. But the problem is that when they've moved the discourse so far to the left, that we actually feel like we need to pull it back to the right. And so what we're doing might not seem as, you know, like a conservative group or just for conservatives, but as opposed to what they're presenting, it's a really conservative idea on a college campus. You see, as I mentioned earlier, in these women's studies departments, they've already made the choice for women that it's all about becoming the CEOs and the presidents and focus solely on the career. You know, they control the syllabi. They control what they're discussing. But they're not discussing ideas like, you know, like daycare, whether daycare is good or bad. You know, what kind of public policy should we be implementing on some of those issues? So I think the reason that we associate ourselves with conservatism is because they've pulled it so far left that we need to bring it back, bring the discourse back to the right.
I cannot help but note that so far every questioner has been a male over the age of 28 or something.
As one has educated two daughters, I can recognize the need for balance that you're introducing into the academic environment. I guess my specific question is, I'm curious as what your young male colleagues' attitude is toward this new effort of yours. Do they endorse it, or are they just apathetic? Can you comment?
Oh, yeah. Actually, we've had a few of them come to the meetings after they saw the group of us getting together, and they joked that they were coming to try to find some girlfriends. So we made them leave when that was the reason they came. But overall, I think that they recognize that this is an issue that is important to us. But I think sometimes they like to joke about the women fighting about these issues and why can't you just all get along. as I look at one in the back who has made those comments before. It's why you can't just all get along. But I think, you know, it's not just the women that are going to be facing these issues. The men are the ones that's going to hear us complaining about them. So they better have a vested interest in helping us get them solved.
Thank you very much for a very informative talk. My question regards the religion of the women in your organization.
Can you say that again?
The religion,
okay.
The women's religion. How many are of the various religion, Jewish, Muslim, Christian, Catholic, etc.?
Well, we're not a religious organization per se, but a lot of our women who come to the organization do have a religious background. So I think when we will talk about issues such as abortion, they'll bring that perspective to the debate. So I think actually religion does inform a lot of their conservative values and traditional values.
I wondered whether you could talk a little bit about the choice of the name of the organization. I mean, I understand the wordplay part, but I'm less clear about the Enlightenment, because going back to the 18th century, that was about breaking with tradition and conservative values, and you seem to be moving back to them. And it also seems you've adopted a name that is fairly exclusionary. It certainly feels that way, and I wonder for the generations of women that preceded you and helped provide the opportunities you've taken full advantage of, what is it, you know, in what sense are we deserving to be excluded and have failed to be enlightened? That's the part I don't understand. How are we enlightened in a sense that you are enlightened?
Okay. Well, to name the organization, you know, if you look through UVA's database, they've got all kinds of acronyms and names. So I knew that when I started this, I needed a good acronym to start. And I thought it would be easily identifiable by doing something in contrast to now. So that's when I came up with NEW. I thought it was a fresh idea. It would really tell people at the beginning what kind of we stood for by putting us in opposition to that. And as to the actual words that we used in NEW, I think I really did choose those because I think they comport with our mission. You see, we have network because we're really trying to create an organization, as I said earlier, that's a community of conservative women. We're creating a network at our campus and nationwide, as was fulfilled by having the national conference. So in that light, we're creating that network. As to the word enlightenment, it focuses on the educational component of NEW. And I think I would bounce the question back to you is when you have an organization like National Organization for Women, when there's women who don't feel comfortable there, are we not women? I mean, I think you can ask that in the same question when you ask, are you not enlightened if you're not NEW? It's just to signify the educational component of the group. And then finally, the women, obviously, were focused on issues that are really striking at the heart of what women are dealing with. So it's not a strictly an exclusionary organization. As I mentioned earlier, we have had women from the other side come and also men come to some of our meetings, and some of the activities that we've held have really focused on creating debate and dialogue rather than just bringing in speakers, like hosting the debate for the vagina monologues and hosting the debate over the women's studies department where we brought in different speakers. So the name was really created both in terms of showing, you know, being a good acronym and then showing our mission. So that's where we came up with it.
Our next questioner has had a career as a successful small business person and
great.
Also as a candidate for the Virginia State Senate.
Thank you, George. Karen, I applaud you. I know the blockades that you probably have met with during this whole setting up of your organization, and I thank you for doing it because I think there are so many women in our colleges today, and being the mother of a college graduate now who went to a fairly liberal university out in Colorado, in Boulder, and she had nowhere to go when she first got there, and or any kind of organization. She was looking and never found that. So consequently, her attitudes went a little too liberal for me, but then she's come back to center, which has been very rewarding to me. What I mainly want to ask you, again, other than telling you how proud I am of you and making this happen, how do you hope to stay involved? Because I think it's very important. You've obviously become a catalyst, and you are on the right track, I feel. I look forward to getting to know more about you and the organization and seeing in what way that I could help others to know you. But I want to know how you predict what you would like to see happen with the with your new organization and how you're going to spread the word after you leave the university.
Yeah, great question. Thank you. So I, as Mr. Gillen mentioned, I graduated from UVA in May, and now I'm in my first year of law school. And so what I continue to do in these 3 years of law school is to continue to work on growing new and expanding it nationwide. And this first year is a little tough, so I've been doing some new stuff, but not as much as I would always like. But as the next 2 years, I really hope to continue to step it up and expand it nationally by writing more articles, going and visiting the campuses more, and just trying to get the word out there. And I'm really hoping to develop some leaders in these young women. What I always tell them, and what is one of the most important things that they do, is that they engage in the larger discourse, for instance, by writing letters to their school newspapers. I really want them to start doing that now, so then when they're out of college, they'll continue doing that and continue being involved. So I think one of the main messages of what I give to these young women, and also what I tell myself, is always to take the proactive stance and be willing to stand up for what you believe in. And I hope to, I've really developed that and cultivated that in myself, and I think a lot of my friends at the UVA chapter to do that, and I really hope to continue that afterwards.
Hi, thanks, Karen. I would self-identify myself as a liberal, and obviously a young woman liberal. And just for the record, I'd like to say that I have attended a new book club event, and I was extremely welcomed, and there was no attitude negative towards any liberal thinkers.
Great.
And I appreciate that a lot. My question is a little bit off of the topic of new and more about your personal policy beliefs. I know as a 1L right now, you're taking constitutional law.
Yes.
So the court over the past like half century has, when evaluating whether or not gender classifications are violations of the Equal Protection Clause, as you know, it's
actually
decided...
that topic's on Monday. I have reading for on Monday, so I think you might be beating me to it.
Okay. Well, the court, when it's evaluating race classifications, uses what it calls strict scrutiny, and just regular classifications, it says rational basis scrutiny. So there's like these two levels. And of late, it's decided to analyze gender classifications on heightened scrutiny, and basically that they're more suspect than just a regular classification of generic things. And I was wondering how you feel about that, if you can speak to that.
If I can speak to that. Well, I have to tell you, it's funny you asked that question, because we just read Brown versus Board of Education, Plessy v. Ferguson, and now we're getting into the affirmative action cases, I think it's Bake versus Regents and Gruttner and Gratz. And so you're beating me just to it. We're discussing affirmative action on Friday, and then Monday our discussion is on strict scrutiny and rational basis on gender classification. So I'm not quite there yet. So ask the specific questions. I can't answer that. But if you want to email me after Monday, I'd be happy to talk with you about that. I wonder if my con law professor planted that one with you. Valia?
Karen, on the doctor's point and expanding the net and marketing, we've talked a little about this already, but I wonder whether describing yourself as culturally conservative would enable you to have a much wider tent, because I think that certainly in the hookup culture among college women, there's not much support for it. You don't have to be conservative to think there's been problems for women there. And on the family versus career, I think there's a whole lot of women beyond conservative Republicans who think that we've been neglecting the family side of that and thinking too much about what's in adults' interests and not what's in kids' interests. So I wonder how you feel about, in what sense are you new conservative rather than culturally conservative, do you think?
Yeah. I think in giving the speech, I've said conservative, but I think what that's really is focusing on is the cultural conservative aspect. Our chapters, sometimes I'll get questions when I'm speaking about, what do you think about the war in Iraq? Or what do you think about, what's going on in the Middle East? And how I always respond is, look, we're on these college campuses, and the issues, you don't have to be an expert on every issue out there. To start a chapter, be an expert on those issues that are really important and are really affecting your university, and you can make a difference on those. So the cultural issues are really big on the college campuses, like the cook-up culture that you mentioned. One of the big jokes on college campuses is that the older guys are always excited when the freshman women come to their frat parties. They call them the fresh meat. And that's the kind of thing that we're really, you know, repulsed by and trying to stop by at least, you know, providing a welcoming environment for those women who are not into that. So I think you hit it a good point, and that I can highlight more that, yeah, we do identify ourselves more as a culturally conservative organization. So.
We have appreciated Karen Agnes's presentation today, and I say with some confidence, I think we'll be hearing a lot from her in the years ahead. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.